Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Josh Buswell Charkow. He is the executive director of Green Corps, which is an amazing organization training our next global leaders. And we'll tell you more about that when he comes on a little bit in the show. But for now, I just want to talk to you a little bit more about my amazing trip last week to Italy for the International Slow Food Conference and also some of the things going on in the news. So, I'm still processing everything that I saw and experienced last week while at the International Slow Food Conference. As I said before, it's an amazing event. There's so many people from so many different parts of the world really coming together. And the slow fish movement, which was almost non-existent 6 years ago when I went there for the first time, has really been taking such a great form now with so many local fishermen on board and the sharing of ideas and systems that are working versus ones that aren't working and how to get local fish directly into the restaurants, and that's really exciting. And the slow meat campaign, which, as you all know, I've been resistant to for a long time as a person who has not eaten meat or chicken for over 40 years, it was really hard for me to be part of an organization that was now promoting a slow meat campaign. But I listened to the executive director of the Humane Society, who, you know, was just talking about how, you know, he's actually a hog farmer. And he was sharing with us how his experience as a hog farmer who's been, you know, for generations raising pigs in a, what he says, you know, in a humane as that can be, but in a sustainable way, he could not compete with the factory farms and the cheap meat that is out there. And he watched so many of his friends and other farmers go out of business over the years because they too could not compete. And he realized that he had more in common with people who are working on the environment and ecologists, environmentalists, and the slow food movement than he did with other meat producers who are raising this cheap meat. And it's been a really interesting process for me as I really try to hear all the sides of the story. And in my heart of hearts, I know that we are not going to turn our society all vegan. People who are eating meat, who love meat, are going to continue to do so. So if we can transition our meat eaters to making a commitment to purchasing meat directly from farmers who are trying to raise their animals in a more respectful way, who allow their animals access to open pasture and who are, letting them graze on the food that they're supposed to eat and not on GMO feed, that we need to support them. We need to support them in a big way, and we need to be willing to pay the extra money it costs to raise animals in that way. And we need to push against the factory farms and the cheap meat industry that has taken over our food system. So that was really, you know, a growing experience for me. And I know this week coming up, actually next week, I guess, November 13th, there's actually an event in Brooklyn called, you know, an in-depth look at cultured meat. And this is actually taking it even to another level where they're looking at the pros and cons of raising meat in a laboratory. How does that look like? What does that look like? And this fall salon, they are partnering with the people from Modern Farmer and Popular Science for a workshop in Brooklyn next week from 7 to 10. And they're going to be looking at, you know, the pros and cons of growing meat in a laboratory. I mean, if you're growing meat in a lab, you're not killing animals, which is certainly a plus. But is it really still the same thing? You know, what does that look like, and is that sustainable going forward? So that's a really big question out there. So that would be an interesting event to check out. Also on November 8th at Cooper Union, there is an event called Voices of Hope in a Time of Crisis. And, you know, I always love the events that take place at Cooper Union. This is being sponsored by the Small Planet Institute. Anna and Francis Moore Lappe's organization. And I think that's going to be really a great, great evening. They have lots of speakers coming from around the world. And they're really looking for people that want to work together to create this international alliance for localization, which is more, you know, up in lines with what I was just talking about. So, again, there's so many things going on. Some other wonderful events is there's a harvest wine dinner out at Chin Estates, which is one of the local vineyards out on the island. And, you know, one of the things when I was in Italy, we actually took some time and went through the vineyards up in the Piemonte area. And we visited two different vineyards. One was more like a factory vineyard where they make millions of bottles of wine a year. And then we also visited a small family farm where they've been doing it for generations, and they're much, much smaller and really walk each of their, you know, each of their vineyards and know the plants and mark each one by hand. And it was a drastic difference. But it was really encouraging to know that both of those farms are also working on a project to reduce the pesticide use and the added sulfites that they put into their wines. And so there's, you know, this awareness of going back to traditional ways of making wines and making our food is really taking hold. And, you know, I have to say, I think the slow food movement has been so, so much behind that. Another wonderful event in the New York area on November 10th, the Long Island Community Gardens Film Group is screening called Ground Operations, and that's out at Stony Brook University from 6 to 9 on November 10th, and that's open to everybody and should be a great evening. On November 11th, also at the Sustainability Studies Program out at Stony Brook University, they're having a speaker, Patty Wood, who has been a guest at my radio show. She's a director of the Grassroots Environmental Education Group, which is a nonprofit organization working to educate people about the toxic dangers in our environment, and that should be great. November 12th, there's a rain garden workshop, and that is taking place on the waterfront in Oyster Bay. And all of these events, by the way, you can find on my website at ieatgreen.com. And November 13th, our local slow food chapter is hosting an event at Sip Tea Lounge in Huntington, and we're going to do a journey through tea, and we're going to be sampling different teas from around the world. And Nicole, the owner of Sip Tea Lounge, is pairing all of the teas with either a sweet or savory treat for all of us to experience. And that's limited. She only can seat 16 people there. So if you're interested in that, please sign up. There's also a beekeeping workshop up at the Pfeiffer Center in, it's not Rockland County, it's actually northern Orange, New Jersey. But near Rockland County, and that's a great, great group. I love the Pfeiffer Center. I've taken some organic or biodynamic agricultural programs and workshops there, and it's just a wonderful place. So you can look up the Pfeiffer Center or check the event out on my website for more information. And what else? We had an election this week. Nothing that surprising, but I'm sure we all are checking our local newspaper to see who won in our area, and either being happy about it or knowing that we have to work harder. I mean, we all need to do our part to make the change happen that we want to see happen. So I want to share a recipe with you before I invite Josh on. This week, the recipe I'm sharing is ratatouille. I'm calling it Madras ratatouille because this time of year when we're harvesting all of our squashes and the last of our green beans and carrots, you know, this stew type of dish, which is very warming and using the vegetables that we're picking right out of the garden, I wanted to change the flavor. So instead of more of an Italian Mediterranean ratatouille, this one has a little bit of an Indian flair. So the vegetables remain the same. We're going to start with two onions cut in half and then sliced into crescent moons, three carrots cut into bite-sized chunks, one small head of broccoli cut into flowerettes, two Japanese eggplants cut into bite-sized pieces, two yellow squash cut into small chunks, 4 cups of chopped chopped greens, Swiss chard, kale, collards. I have all of that still in my garden, so all of those went into it. 2 cups of cut tomatoes. Yes, believe it or not, I still had cherry tomatoes. So that's what I put in here. 2 cups of green beans, 1 tablespoon grated ginger, 2 tablespoons chopped garlic, olive oil, 1 tablespoon of coconut oil, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of curry powder, 1/2 teaspoon of garam masala. Garam masala is a mixture of spices that includes things like fenugreek and cinnamon and cloves. So just you can find it pretty much at any Indian store or your local Whole Foods. They'll have that kind of mixture called garam masala. And then I put in 1 tablespoon of chopped cilantro. That's optional. I know some people don't like cilantro. You can, of course, put in parsley instead if you don't like cilantro. So you're going to cover the bottom of a large, heavy pot with oil. And when the oil's hot, you can start with the onions. As I say, you always start with the root vegetables first. So you're going to put in the onions and cook those until they're translucent. Then add the carrots, the eggplant, and I'm going to add the coconut powder into that as well, along with the coconut oil, garlic, and ginger. And continue cooking at medium-high heat for about 5 minutes. And cooking the spices, this really allows them the flavors to come out in those spices, especially the curry powder. Then you're going to add the broccoli, the green beans, and cook for another few minutes. Add the tomatoes, the salt, the chopped greens, and let that cook down for about 5 minutes. And once the greens have cooked down, you'll add the garam masala and the cilantro. And just let all those tastes come together for about 5 minutes before you serve it up. Always taste it before you serve it. Add more salt if you'd like, or a little bit more of the spicy herbs if you'd like. And that's it. You can, of course, garnish it with some more cilantro if you like, or fresh parsley. And any questions, you can send an email to me at bhavani@ieatgreen. And this also will be posted on the PRN website as well as my website. So now it's my pleasure to introduce Josh to all of you. Josh Buswell Charkow is the executive director of Green Corps, which is a nonprofit organization that oversees, he's a campaign director of Green Corps, and it oversees training young people who are just graduating from college into a training program that helps them become leaders for nonprofits of all different for all different areas, and it's really an amazing organization. And Josh is responsible for overseeing the operations, the budgets, the strategic planning, and campaign outreach for Green Corps. Before joining Green Corps, Josh worked with Save the Sierra campaign for forest ethics, where he worked to shift the logging practices of California's largest forest destroyer. He also played a critical role in forest ethics' successful campaign to convince Victoria's Secret to adopt one of the most environmentally robust catalog policies. And prior to joining that, Joshua was the North Coast organizer for the California Wilderness Coalition. And there he helped to protect more than 280,000 acres of wildlands as wilderness. And Josh is a 2003 graduate of Green Corps and a 2002 graduate of Wesleyan University. Josh, are you with us?
I am.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
So I first learned of Green Corps because I met one of your graduates, Hillary, who has mm-hmm. been out here working with Food and Water Watch. Actually, she's working with the New Yorkers Against Fracking,
I think, yeah.
Right, New Yorkers Against Fracking, which is, you know, Food and Water Watch also partners with them to raise awareness about fracking. But I love your organization. Love it.
Thank you.
How did Green Corps get started?
Yeah, well, so we got our start back in the early 90s. So as you might remember, Earth Day 1990 was, you know, one of the largest. I think it was something like 200 million people took part in actions all across the country. There was just this huge interest in the environment. This was, of course, also coming out of the 80s when Ronald Reagan was the president, and you saw lots of rollbacks on kind of our nation's founding environmental law, so the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, et cetera. And so there was this massive Earth Day that came out of this, both interest in the environment and then also, I think, partially a reaction to kind of the politics at the time. And coming out of that, you saw a lot of schools create environmental studies departments. And so students were actually studying the history of the environmental movement and the history of environmental issues and how they impact our planet and they impact human health for the first time. And so they were graduating from these departments and looking to kind of put their values to work. But there wasn't a logical place for them to go. So, you know, at the time, there was a heavy focus with a lot of the larger environmental groups on kind of inside the Beltway lobbying in Washington, D.C., which wasn't really capitalizing on the kind of mass support there was for the environment all across the country. So there was that going on. And then the other thing that you had going on is that groups that were even interested in hiring people were typically looking for people that had experience at environmental organizations. But, of course, they had, you know, it was hard for them to get their foot in the door in the first place. And so a lot of times people just thought the only way that they could make an impact on environmental issues was to go to law school and become a lawyer. And so, which is, of course, a fine pursuit, but there's other ways that you can also make an impact on environmental issues through mobilizing and building kind of citizen power to implement environmental laws. And so Green Corps was started to essentially capitalize on that moment, and we got our birth out of what's now called the Public Interest Network, who at the time had an organization that, which still exists, called USPIRG, which had a component of hiring often recent college graduates, training them on how to be advocates and organizers. But at the time, USPIRG was working on a variety of issues, consumer issues, democracy issues. So Green Corps was started to train often recent college graduates in the skills of how to mobilize and galvanize people to demonstrate to a decision maker that they should act in the best interest of the environment. So we got our start. The first class graduated in 1993. So we're going on our 23rd year right now. Mm-hmm. In that time, we've worked on more than 120 campaigns. We've worked with more than 50 different organizations, worked on federal campaigns, we've worked on state campaigns, local campaigns, corporate campaigns, ballot initiatives, kind of every kind of variant of that under the sun. And then lots of issues too, a lot of work on climate change, expanding clean energy, protecting our last wild places, a lot of work on food issues. We're working on fracking now for the first time. So that's kind of how we got our start.
Mm-hmm. And why do you focus on training organizers rather than some other approach?
Yeah. Well, Ralph Nader has this great quote, which is that we have more problems than we deserve and more solutions than we apply. And when we think about the environmental problems that are currently facing us right now, we really don't believe that there's a lack of solutions. In fact, if you know, there are solutions that exist in abundance to all of the big problems that we face right now. But what we believe is that we're really lacking political will to get those solutions implemented. In other words, our decision makers, oftentimes due to kind of the undue influence of interests that would rather not change the status quo, would rather kind of continue with, pollution continuing as it's going, or burning more dirty fossil fuels, all that kind of stuff. They'd rather keep that going than go in a more environmentally friendly tack. And they have a disproportionate influence on, the people that are writing and implementing our nation's environmental laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so we believe that there's really two sources of power when it comes to tackling an issue like this, right? There's money and there's people. And unfortunately, we just have nowhere near the amount of resources as
these corporations
that are out there. Right, that would rather keep the status quo. But one thing that we definitely do have is the people, right? I mean, you look at poll after poll, people, want to be able to, breathe clean air. They want to know what's in the food that they're eating. They, believe in, expanding clean energy opportunities. All this stuff makes common sense. It's just political will to get that stuff implemented. And so we focus on organizing because that's the best tool that we think we have to change the status quo, to go out and identify people that are passionate about these issues, recruit them to get involved in environmental campaigns, and kind of build that political support that it takes to move even the most kind of recalcitrant decision maker to act in the interests of the environment. And so that's why we focus on organizing.
And you've been with the organization since 2003, right?
Well, I did the program in 2003, and then I after I graduated, I worked for a number of organizations, and then I came back in February of 2010 as the campaigns director, and then became the executive director.
And have you seen over the years that while you've been involved, and I'm sure you can't talk from the very beginning, but have you seen an increase in people's activism, or have you seen more of growth in apathy and people not being willing to take initiatives?
I think there is a lot of interest and desire for change right now. And I think, you're in New York, I think, and, we're coming off of the largest rally against climate change in the history of our country. I think something like 400,000 people turned out in the streets of New York.
It was great.
Yeah, it was amazing, right? And so, and just, you look at food issues. This is an issue, and obviously this is an issue you care a lot about. I mean, this is an issue that when I did Green Corps back in 2003, there really wasn't any kind of like organized effort to reform our nation's woefully outdated food laws when it comes to factory farms, when it comes to the spraying of chemicals on our food, et cetera, et cetera. All this stuff has really come to the forefront because people have started to realize that there are real problems going on and have started to demand action from their decision makers. One area where I'm seeing this in particular, at Green Corps, a lot of times we're recruiting folks who are about to graduate from college to do our program. And, a great example of just kind of the surge in interest in environmental issues is this effort to divest in schools' endowments from fossil fuels. And just recently you saw the Rockefeller Foundation do it. A number of other foundations have followed suit, and universities have as well. Stanford just last year divested their endowment from all holdings of coal companies. And literally hundreds of colleges all across the country, there are students that want action to be taken on climate change, and so this is the path that they're pursuing on their college campus. 15 years ago, I don't know if the same thing would have occurred on school. So I definitely think that there is a real interest in, change happening, changing the status quo, really dealing with the myriad of environmental challenges that, in particular, that younger generations are going to have to face way more than perhaps my parents or that I'll even have to face.
Mm-hmm. And getting people to Green Corps, you mentioned that you actually recruit people. I would think people would be, sending you resumes and fighting to get in, because unlike most nonprofit organizations or training programs, you actually pay your people to be trained. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is. We're a year-long paid fellowship, and it runs from August to August, and our whole mission is to train organizers, work on today's most pressing environmental campaigns, and graduate activists with the skills, temperament, and commitment to fight and win tomorrow's environmental battles. So we really see our program as, a stepping stone for people who are motivated by these issues and want to make a career out of fighting for a cleaner environment in the future. But they need the skills to be able to be effective advocates and agents for social change. And so, yeah, we over the course of the year, they definitely are paid. They work on a variety of campaigns, and then we help them to find a job when the year is up.
Mm-hmm.
But we do run an extensive recruitment campaign. We do receive a number of applications every year. So just last year, we received almost 1,800 applications.
For how many slots?
We ended up offering 32 people in the Green Corps class of
2015. Yeah, so it is very competitive.
It is very competitive. Well, as I was just saying, it's a paid fellowship, and we do see our program as a springboard for people who are going to be long-term agents for change. And so for us to kind of invest in someone, we're very particular in the people that we take. We're looking for people that are really committed to doing this work for the long haul, that are very passionate about these issues, people who are going to do the hard work that's necessary to, get legislation passed. And so we do spend a lot of time and put a lot of focus on the people that we offer into the program, because we are looking for the next executive directors of, the Sierra Club or the National Wildlife Federation or Food and Water Watch, or, all the other organizations out there that are doing really important work.
Mm-hmm. And are there still many or enough nonprofits out there that do pay salaries for these graduates when they come out?
Well, every year our organizers are in demand. So we just graduated the Green Corps class of 2014 back in August. 90% of them either had jobs at the time of graduation or received jobs within 2 months of graduating from the program.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking jobs, so they're taking paid positions with organizations. And I think that happens, for a couple of reasons. One is we have a reputation for training and graduating really hardworking, smart, passionate organizers, savvy organizers. But I think the other thing is the environmental movement, I think, is increasingly prioritizing organizing as a strategy to win. They know that it's not enough to, just lobby decision makers in D.C. if you don't have the public behind you, out in the states across the country. And that's really what we're all about. And it's hard to find organizers that are trained in this craft, people that know how to, effectively mobilize and inspire people to take action. And so I think the kind of combination of those two things, with organizations putting a heavier focus on organizing, and then our graduates, having gone through a very rigorous program where they're well equipped to go to an organization and add a lot of value, I think that combination means that, our folks end up, having their pick of the lot, but certainly being able to find employment doing really important work when they finish the program.
Mm-hmm. Can you share with us who some of your alumni are?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really proud of all of our alumni, and we've graduated nearly 350 people. The vast majority of them
continue to stay engaged in doing environmental and social change and kind of progressive organizing. And they run the gamut. So a graduate from the second class of Green Corps is a woman named Sarah Hodgson, who's now the National Program Director for the Sierra Club. She's essentially the second in command at the Sierra Club under their executive director. The just outgoing executive director of Greenpeace USA is a guy named Phil Radford, who was actually in the Green Corps class of 1999. He was the youngest executive director in Greenpeace's history. He was only 33 years old when he assumed that title. The former executive directors of Rock the Vote and MoveOn.org, Heather Smith and Justin Rubin, are both graduates of Green Corps. So definitely.
What does Rock the Vote do?
Rock the Vote is all about essentially youth engagement in voting and getting more young people engaged in the democratic process and,
uh-huh.
and voting. So you have some of those folks who work at some of the larger organizations, but then we also have folks that are working at state-based organizations or regional-based organizations. But all of them are taking the kind of skills and the expertise and the organizing know-how that they learned during their Green Corps year and applying it to their jobs to make for a more effective, more strategic environmental movement and social change movement.
You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Josh Buswell Charkow, who is the Executive Director of Green Corps. And we've been talking about the training of organizers that they do at their organization and the kind of campaigns that they're all working on. So, there's so many issues out there. Do you find that a majority of your trainees are interested in one
yeah.
area more than another?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think that right now, the people that are applying to Green Corps, there are definitely a set of issues that kind of bubble up to the surface more than others. One is climate change. And this was, I was interested in climate change when I applied to Green Corps back in 2002. But I think it is a little bit different now in that, literally we have people that are applying to Green Corps that, their families were displaced by Hurricane Sandy. Climate change is becoming very, very real to a lot of the people. Or, they were in New Orleans for Katrina or what have you. So climate change and just expanding clean energy opportunities is certainly one that I think is on a lot of our candidates' minds. You mentioned fracking, particularly people that are applying from Pennsylvania or New York, North Dakota, states where a lot of this activity is going on, that is a huge issue. And again, that is an issue that 10 years ago, no one even knew what fracking was. And now it's a huge, huge issue. So certainly we see that as well. Food issues is another one. I talked about that a little bit before, but this was something more and more you're seeing on college campuses, organic gardens starting up. They're reading Michael Pollan or Mark Bittman. They know that there's something wrong with our food system. The spread and increasing consolidation of giant factory farms. The health risks that are associated with food issues, stuff like antibiotics in the food that farmers are sometimes giving to livestock. So that's an issue that I think is also coming up as well. We do also certainly get people who, care about conservation. So, land conservation, protecting species, ocean conservation, all that kind of stuff. That hasn't gone away, particularly because you think about universities so often. They're spending time, if you're a bio major or you're an environmental studies major, a lot of times you'll be doing research on how, rivers are polluted or, how the landscape is adapting to climate change and whatnot. So you definitely see people who are interested in those things, but certainly that kind of climate change, fracking, food issues are things that I think are kind of on the rise
mm-hmm.
as far as issues that our applicants really care about.
Yeah. At the beginning of the show, I talked about fisheries. You know, 6 years ago when I was out at the International Slow Food Conference in Italy, nobody was really talking about slow fish or, you know, using mm-hmm. local fisheries and really needing to eat local fish. And now that's
yeah.
really
absolutely
taken up into the forefront. Do you have anyone working on those issues?
We have done some work on that in the past. We actually did some work with Food and Water Watch on this issue about 5 years ago, working to kind of support more or get legislation passed that would encourage kind of more of local fisheries and that kind of thing, versus kind of the directing of funds to these giant ocean trawlers that, you know, just drag their nets and they're
right.
miles and miles wide. So there is a little bit of that. One thing I kind of just touched upon this briefly, but the way that our program actually works is that we provide a classroom training to all of our organizers on the skills of advocacy and organizing, so literally like how you go and you recruit volunteers and build a coalition or talk to the media and public speaking. But then the way that we work on these campaigns is that literally groups come to us and say, hey, you know, I'd like a team of your organizers to work on my issue. So, you know, you mentioned the work that our organizers are doing with New Yorkers Against Fracking. So literally we have four organizers who during their Green Corps year are working essentially as representatives of New Yorkers Against Fracking. We have others that are working on behalf of the Sierra Club or Food and Water Watch. And so what it means is that they're able to, you know, when they're fresh out of college, get to really be a representative for some of these organizations. We still manage all of our organizers, and so we're doing, you know, regular check-ins with them, and our staff will go out and visit them in the field and see how they're doing, because again, we are a training program and we want to make sure that they're, you know, that they're learning this craft, but we really believe in learning by doing. So they learn these skills in a classroom setting, and then they go and they actually implement them working on real urgent environmental campaigns. And so that's kind of how we're, when I say, you know, that we've worked on this campaign or that campaign, what I really mean is our organizers have worked on behalf of organizations on this campaign or that
mm-hmm.
campaign.
But you also, like you said, do the classroom training. So where are you located? Are you in D.C.?
Well, I'm actually based in Oakland. We have other staff that are based in Denver. We do what we call a classroom training. We don't have like a campus per se, but over the course of 8 weeks during the year, we bring our organizers together for training in a classroom type setting. So it begins in August with an intensive 3-week introductory training. We do that actually in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Typically for that training, we actually do use a college's space. Over the years, we've been using this small college called Fisher College. We'll use one of their classrooms for our training every day. But then we'll also do a week-long training in October, December, February, and April as well. And those trainings, oftentimes, they're either in Boston, D.C., or Denver. And for that, again, we say classroom training because it's in a classroom type setting. Sometimes we'll use the space provided by a nonprofit. Sometimes we'll use the space provided by a college, as I mentioned, Fisher College at our August training. But the idea is more that we're giving these, we're training them in these skills in kind of a controlled environment. You know, how you go and you recruit a volunteer and then how you develop them as a leader, how you speak to their motivations or, you know, how you put on a press conference. And then they'll go out and they'll work on behalf of real organizations, you know, putting those skills to work on real environmental campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Another question I had for you, I wanted to know if anyone's working on the increase of pharmaceuticals in our water. That's something that's, you know, kind of new in the news.
Yeah.
You know, we've always been working with water cleanup, but
yeah.
Now the news coming out of how many pharmaceuticals are actually in our water is alarming. Anyone
doing really
work
alarming.
With that?
We have not worked on that. You know, I should say that if there's any organizations out there that would be interested in talking to me about potentially having our organizers work on your campaigns, you should feel free to reach out to me. My email is just josh@greencorps, green like the color green, and corps like Marine Corps, .org. So if there's a group out there that's working on that and you're like, gosh, I'd love to have some trained organizers, please reach out to me. Bhavani, we haven't worked on that per se, but one thing that two areas that are kind of close to that. One is we did some work in Maryland on the issue of it was literally like cyanide that was being put into chicken feed and was ultimately ending up because of these giant chicken factory farms on the kind of the seaboard of Maryland. Oftentimes the waste was ending up in the Chesapeake Bay, which means that cyanide was ending up in the bay as well, which is obviously devastating. I mean, the manure is devastating for the local environment, but so are these, you know, chemicals as well. That's one thing that we're working on that's kind of related, or have worked on that's kind of related. We're also working right now with Food and Water Watch on the issue of antibiotics and factory farms, which I talked about just briefly, but it's a terrifying issue where something like 75% of the antibiotics that are used in this country are being given to livestock as a growth supplement to help them grow and to compensate for the filthy conditions that these animals often live in, right, where they're actually having to walk around in waste and whatnot. And so a huge amount of the antibiotics in our country are just going to factory farms, and this can give rise to antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which, you know, obviously has huge implications, right, for all of us, right? You know, we need antibiotics to be working. I have a child, so this is, you know, something that I think about a lot. I'd be devastated if he contracted a antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And so what we're doing right now is actually essentially laying the groundwork to try and get federal legislation passed on this. And how we're doing that is we're working with Food and Water Watch to get city council resolutions in strategic cities all across the country to essentially pass resolutions calling on Congress to take action. And the thinking is that by doing that, we're building up kind of an activist infrastructure in some really critical congressional districts all across the country that we can then deploy to, you know, pressuring Congress to take action on this, particularly, you know, if and when there's a more kind of hospitable climate in Congress for moving that kind of legislation.
You know, I've been watching this a lot too, but a couple weeks ago, didn't the U.S. just pass some legislation that allows more use of antibiotics?
The Obama administration has taken some action on this issue, but, you know, I think most of the groups that are concerned about this issue would say that, you know, it's a good step, but it's nowhere near as comprehensive as it needs to be.
No, I mean actually the opposite. I just thought the U.S. Congress approved the use of even additional antibiotic use.
I'm not sure about that, to be honest, so I can't comment.
I know
on
I had
it.
A petition going around to ask people to sign up to prevent that from happening. But, you know, it was mind-blowing to me because I just have been involved in making people aware of the antibiotic use. And, you know, you see it in the papers all the time. And, you know, public outcry is certainly against it. And then I thought Congress had just passed, like, additional use of antibiotics.
This is something, you know, when we were talking earlier about, you know, environmental issues that are on the rise and stuff like that. I mean, one thing about the environment and food issues as well, I mean, they're so often interconnected and interrelated, is just that, I mean, really, these are issues that impact all of us. I mean, it really doesn't matter if you're, rich or poor, you're black and white. I mean, everyone needs safe food to eat. Everyone needs clean air to breathe, clean water to drink. And, you know, I think that's part of the thing, too, with these issues on why they're just, you know, people are paying more attention to them. Is, you know, you think about something like antibiotics. I mean, no one, you know, when you hear the idea that, you know, 75% of the antibiotics are just going to factory farms to essentially make for fatter cows and pigs, I mean, anyone with an inkling of common sense knows that that's just a terrible idea and a terrible abuse of, you know, of our antibiotics, which we really need to deal with real health problems. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason, too, why these issues are on the rise.
Right. So when do you start asking people to apply, like for next year, August?
Yeah.
Is it time for people to start thinking about it?
We are knee-deep in the recruitment process right now, Bhavani. In fact, our application for the next class of Green Corps, that's the Green Corps class of 2016, opened on September 1st. We started accepting applications. We, I think, as of right now, have receive somewhere around 750 or 800 applications for next year's class. We actually just held our interview. The way that it works is someone applies to Green Corps. We invite a set of candidates to a first round interview, which is often conducted over the phone, and then we invite a set of candidates to a second round day-long interview, and those take place in various locations across the country. We just had our first second round interview for next year's class in Boston, actually, this past weekend. And so the class, we've already started offering people positions in the Green Corps class of 2016. So even though they're not going to start until August of next year, we're already starting to offer people positions in next year's class.
Really?
Yeah.
And when does the application process stop? Like, when is it too late to apply?
So we typically do not accept applications after like March 31st, the end of March. We kind of close up for the late spring and then the summer, and then we start up again recruiting for what will at that point be, I suppose, the Green Corps class of 2017, hard to believe. So really between now and late March is when, if people are interested, they should apply. And really I would encourage
That's not for 2015? That's the 2016?
It's for the class of 2016. So
the graduating class, but the starting time would be 2015.
That's correct. But I would say for anyone who you know, hearing this is, you know, maybe interested in applying, I would definitely urge you to get your application in, you know, as soon as possible, because, you know, again, it's going to close in March, and then we also let our candidates know quite quickly after a second round interview whether they're going to have a position with us. So even though our we just did our second round interview just this past Saturday in Boston, I'm calling people today to actually offer them positions in the class. So if someone is interested, they would actually know within a pretty short span of time whether they've actually been whether there will be a position for them in the next Green Corps class. So definitely would encourage people to jump on that if they're interested.
And do you close out at 32, or you sometimes have larger classes?
Occasionally we'll take larger classes. So sometimes, you know, my Green Corps class, for instance, there was 35 people. Sometimes it's less. Sometimes it'll be, you know, 25 or 28. It depends. I mean, we are a boutique program, so we would never really grow much, if any, beyond, I would say, 35, just because of the way that we're set up. But it's also just a factor of the kind of attention that we put into finding everyone who does our program. You know, again, we're looking for people that see themselves doing this for the long term, really want to be powerful agents of change, and those people are hard to find.
Right. I love the way that sounds, powerful agents of change. That's great. So people can just go on to the Green Corps website and find an application there if they are interested?
That's correct. So if people are interested, if you go to the Green Corps website, very prominently at the top of the page, there will be a link that says click here to apply. And essentially you fill out your contact information, you'll receive a link where you can apply to the program, and then we will be in touch with you after that. So, yeah, to apply, I would just urge everyone to go to greencorps.org. So green, again, green like the color green, and corps like Marine Corps.org, and all the information is right there on our website, as well as additional details about the program.
Well, thank you, Josh. This has been so informative and really you know, the work that you guys are doing is unbelievable. My one last question would be, how do you get funding? Like, who pays for all of this training? Do you do fundraising?
Yeah, well, we certainly have to, we certainly fundraise. I spend a lot, as the executive director, I spend a lot of time on that. We receive income from a variety of sources. One is that we have members. So, you know, literally people who heard about the Green Corps program and, you know, say, hey, I want to support that. So we have a small, but I would say very dedicated membership base, somewhere around 2,000 or 2,500 people that mm-hmm. write us checks. We also have major donors, people that, you know, write significantly larger checks. We receive money from foundations as well. And then the third area where we receive support is actually from organizations that our organizers work on behalf of. So it's kind of a fee-for-service model. Groups will actually, you know, essentially pay us to have our organizers work on their campaign. So that makes up part of the income as well. But we need to subsidize that with money from, again, individuals and from foundations. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyone listening, even if you don't want to apply but you want to support this work, you can go on their website and do that as well and help support this organization. So, Josh, thanks so much for joining us. It's been really informative, and I wish you the best of luck. Hillary's been a great addition to our community here on Long Island, and she's doing an awesome job.
She is. Well, hey, thank you for this opportunity, Bhavani. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all the kind words.
You're so welcome. And everyone out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you again next week. Bye for now.